beer is warm, the women cold, and the bullets fly thick. I am the deputy, Stu Kaufman.
And I've got a complicated face. I'm Amy McLeod.
And I am a time traveler from the 1970s. My name is Melissa Huggins.
And tonight we watched, from 1969, nice, More Dead Than Alive, directed by Robert Spar, and starring Clint Walker, Anne Francis, and Vincent Price. And before we really dive into this, can we all just take a moment and marvel at what an absolute unit Clint Walker was?
Oh my God.
Big fella.
That man was a city block.
Talk like, about a himbo, like, am I right?
Did he did he ever play Superman? Because that man, I think, like,
oh yeah,
like he, like, if you ever look at oh God, who currently plays Superman?
What's his name? Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill. Like, if you ever look at Henry Cavill when he is at his Superman beefiest, like,
right,
he is a giant man. I think this man is bigger.
Like, one of my notes early on in this movie is like, man, what a get for this little film. They had Vincent Price and Paul Bunyan.
Right?
I mean, they had Vincent Price and Anne Francis. Like, Anne Francis is a huge star. I was really pleased to see her. She's in one of my favorite movies, Forbidden Planet, which stars an incredibly young Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen. It's been a while since I've seen that. Yeah. Nice.
It's you kind of have to turn your, like, brain off a little bit for it, because it's like really sexist. But it's a great movie, and she is just like, every scene she is in, she's fabulous, and it's wonderful to watch Leslie Nielsen be a serious character.
Right. You're just waiting for him to crack some weird non sequitur.
Like, what is happening? It's like you expect that, like, you know, and don't call me Shirley, like, to happen.
Right.
Absolutely.
But so it was a delight to see her. But yeah, no, he walked on. I was like, how big is that man? Like, can
it's
anyone?
A giant,
like,
man.
He's a huge fella.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he should have just, like, been, like, I expected him to, like, get shot at the, well I guess we'll cover that.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But before I do a spoiler, Amy, do you want to spoil this for us?
Yeah, I'll spoil it. I mean, we've always been a pretty spoiler-heavy podcast. I don't know. We do older movies. Maybe if we do a newer movie, we'll have to, like, save our spoilers to the end or something.
Spoiler alert, Clint Walker is Superman. Yeah.
But I would say, like, this especially, like, if you want to go into this movie not knowing the end, and it's pretty effective if you don't know the end, how the end works. Pause now, go watch the movie, and then come back.
Yeah, it's free on Tubi if you don't want to pay to rent it, so you could check it out there. Yeah, because I feel like if I knew the ending going into this, I don't know that I would have watched it. But anyway, so, oh God, I don't even know where to start. I guess we'll start at the beginning of the movie.
that's pretty good.
Does it start where most Westerns do?
It starts where most Westerns do. We are in a Western prison, a prison in the desert. I started writing a very, like, poetic type of summary for this, and then I gave up on it, but I really like what I wrote for the beginning, so I'll read that off. I have, four men are hanged for murder. A man plays harmonica in the prison beside the gallows. At the moment of their deaths, a man vomits. Chants of hang the warden begin to echo among the imprisoned. Men leap out of coffins to begin to stage a jailbreak. And then it just kind of goes downhill from there. But that's setting the scene for the beginning. We have a jailbreak. A lot of people attempt to escape the jail. And a lot of people are absolutely ground up by a Gatling gun. One gentleman gets free and escapes. But our man Killer Kane is who we're following. He stays in the prison because he's getting ready to get out, and he's like, I've seen a lot of men hanged, and I'm gonna do my time. You know, I'm done breaking the law. So we have Professor Exposition telling us that Kane is a fully rehabilitated man who he'd be shocked if he ever picked up a gun again. Foreshadowing. So we meet Kane. He's basically, he is trying to kind of pick up the pieces. He's been in jail for 18 years. And he wants to get a job and just kind of live his life. He's kind of like, I killed men for a living. He's known for killing 12 people, and he has a gun with 12 notches in it for every man he killed. But he's kind of like, I want to leave that behind. But like most people who have been to prison, he is having a really hard time finding work. Nobody wants to hire him. It's like, as soon as they find out he's Killer Kane, they're like, get the hell out of here. He even tried to, he got a job at a saloon for a while as a bouncer. He lied about his name, and then when his boss found out, he kicked him out. Which I'm like, I feel like if you explain that situation, it'd be like, well, I lied about who I was because, you know, I couldn't get a job. Like, obviously I've been doing good work. Can't you understand why I might have hidden my identity? But no, he loses that job.
Which, why would you fire a bouncer that is the size of a sequoia?
I found my note where I just wrote Kane, Gaston.
Like, yeah, I know. Like, no one slaps like Gaston.
he did slap some dudes. It was pretty great.
I also did enjoy that Kane had one name, like Cher.
He did. Yeah, because at one point he gets a job moving some cargo from one place to another, but it ends up he gets jumped where he's supposed to drop the cargo off by some dudes who like were pissed at him from being in prison with him and him being a goody two shoes. So they beat the shit out of him, and he meets up with Monica, whatever her last name is. She's an artist traveling the West and like just painting and drawing things as she goes. And, when I first saw her, because he's like drinking water out of her
canteen,
and he's talking to her, and she's off screen, and I was like, "Who is he talking to?" Because you don't see, because he's kind of like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And when it cuts to her, the way that she's in the distance, I thought she was a child.
I thought the same thing
like
too.
She was real short, and then she started talking, and I was like, "Oh, no, that is a grown woman."
Right, like the small boy.
Yeah, I was like, "Who's this tiny child?" And I was like, "Oh no, that's the artist."
And it is beautiful Anne Francis.
Yeah, and she was great, but she was like, "What's your name?" And he's like, "Kane," and she's like, "What? You know, do you have any other name?" And he's like, "Just Kane," and he's like, "She's like Justin Kane."
My name's Kane.
Kane.
Just Kane.
Justin Kane.
No, ma'am. Just, only Kane.
Which, he ended up going by Justin when he worked in the saloon, which I thought was really cute, that he's like, well, bye, I guess I'll take that.
I guess he doesn't know he can have two names.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm like, you can have a last name, my man. Or I'm like, I'm wondering if Kane is his last name. Like, was he never given a first name? It's not very clear, but I'm like, I just go by Kane. Because he's too cool for two names.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's Kane's main issue, is he just wants to earn a living and just, you know, be alone, you know, just like live his life without any bothering. But his past keeps cropping up. He ends up hooking up with Dan Ruffalo, who does a traveling gun show and has like artifacts from the Old West and things like that, where he kind of dresses up in like a fancy, it was very like Cat Ballou, black cowboy outfit. And he's like, I never wore anything like this. And Dan Ruffalo, who is Vincent Price, is kind of like, don't worry about it. Like, this is what they want to see.
No.
Like, he's very much like, we're selling an experience here. We're not selling the truth. So he works in the traveling show, you know, does some trick shooting, and people come to see like, oh, the Killer Kane, the man who killed 12 dudes. In the show is also a young man named Billy. He's supposed to be underage, but I thought he looked like he was like 40.
I looked.
Do you know how? Sorry.
I was gonna say I looked up his age. Oh God, where did I write
did
it down?
I did
oh,
too.
Can you find it faster?
I did. I actually wrote it down. You know how old actor? Let's see.
Paul Hampton.
Paul Hampton was 32.
It was like And they're like, you're underage. You can't drink here.
Bullshit.
I know. I was like, if I was the bartender and he sidled up, I'd be like, what are you having? Like, how was your day at right. the office, sir?
Right. That is a man with a regular car payment.
And his hat fell off. And I swear I saw a bald spot. I was like, that is not. Ah! Like, he's supposed to be like 16 based on the writing.
Yeah, it was like this is not correct at all.
Yeah.
Like
he's supposed to be young enough that the bartender is like, I'm not serving you. Like I was like, he does not like not even close.
That's the worst casting choice of this entire movie.
Yeah, he looks like Luke Wilson and like every bit as old as Luke Wilson looks.
And I feel like they were trying to style him younger, like his haircut and like they're styling him like he's a young man, but it doesn't look like it.
No, even a little bit.
Doesn't work. But yeah, we've got Billy, and Billy is a sharpshooter. He's a really good shot, and he's not a big fan of sharing the spotlight with Kane. And he's also really romanticizing the old West that Kane kind of became infamous in, where he's like, oh, the good old days. It's kind of one of those. And it's like, this was well before Billy, the character Billy, would have been born. The actor who's playing Billy would have been born at the time, if we're going with that age. But
Yeah, he would have been born during the Civil War.
Uh-huh. So there's some tension there, because Billy is jealous that Kane makes more money than him and is more famous than him, when Billy's like, I'm the better shot, I should be more famous, I'm the star. And he tries to get kind of stories out of Kane to, you know, kind of feed that image that he has of what the Old West was. So that's kind of a little subplot there. Kane ends up leaving the show after a bit of a confrontation with Billy. Because Billy, you know, someone tries to call Kane out and Kane's like, I'm not going to shoot you. Like, I'm not going to do that anymore. If you want to shoot me, I guess go ahead. But I'm not going to, like, stand outside with you and shoot you with my gun. And Billy's like, why the hell not? I want to see some cool shit. Like, and Kane keeps trying to say, like, it was not cool shit. Like, what I did was not cool. It was not a cool time to be alive. Like, stop trying to make it cool. It's not cool. So they have a bit of a confrontation.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
That's exactly. Yeah. Stop trying to make fetch happen, Billy. So Kane leaves the show, ends up hooking back up with Monica. They cross paths again, kind of skip. I'm hitting the big points here, but he ends up staying with her at her house, and they decide he's like, I bet I could make a ranch here. You can do your painting stuff. I'll work the land and pay you rent, and it'll be great. He tries to get money so he can get started, because he really like wants to do it by himself. He doesn't want to impose on Monica at all. So he goes to join the gun show again, and like that just Billy just like cracks. He can't handle it. Ends up shooting Ruffalo and getting himself shot in a very dumb way. And then Kane's a little too late to like save him, but ends up beating the shit out of the guy that shoots Billy. And then we kind of skip ahead to, I don't know, a few months later, where he's kind of living happily with Monica.
And this is where you should just end the movie.
Just stop the movie. Don't like, watch any further.
She says goodbye to a guy, and as a guy's riding up the path, just turn the movie off there. Just turn it off there.
Turn the movie off.
Right. Write your own ending. They raise a bunch of kids. It's great.
Mm-hmm. They have all the livestock. She paints all the beautiful paintings. But one thing I forgot to mention is kind of like in the last 30 minutes of the movie, there's this lawyer character that pops up looking for him. And it is kind of like, well, what does a lawyer want with Kane? Who knows? Like, whatever. So he finally catches up to them in like literally the last minute of this movie, like 2 minutes to go. He shows up. And is like, oh, where's your husband, miss? And she's like, oh, he's over there. We have Kane kind of come around the corner of the house, be like, hey, mister, what can I do you for? Lawyer man shoots him a couple times and says, you killed my dad 20 years ago. Fuck you. And then he rides off. And that's it. That's how it ends.
It's sad. So, it's sad. It's tragic. It's upsetting.
It's very upsetting.
Very upsetting. It feels like you've watched this man struggle the entire movie, only for him to fail. Like, he gets what he wants, and then it fails. Because I'm like, is the lesson of this movie supposed to be, don't even try to forget about your past, because it will all, like, you know, just give up. Like, past will always come back to haunt you.
Like, the pacing of this movie and everything, like, there was some action-y stuff, but I was like, is this just a character study of Kane? And then my notes are, at the end, I was like, holy shit, he shot him. And then in all caps, what the fuck? Like, that I'm dropping the F-bomb early, because I was like, I was so mad.
It makes the movie so bleak.
I've watched enough film noirs where I'm just like, sometimes you just don't get a happy ending.
No, and I think that's fine. And like, one thing, like, I think this movie did a good job of that, of it being a bleak movie. Like, I'm upset, but I'm not, like, I wouldn't say it was, like, we're getting a little early into this, but, like, I wouldn't say it was a bad movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like, it made sense. Like, I'm like, that is something I can believe happening. I just didn't like it.
No.
That's the feeling the movie wanted to elicit, and it succeeded. Yes,
it did a good job of that. Although, I wish it had been much clearer in the, like, gang that hunts him. Or that, like, is, like, pissed at him. Because it was, like, with that jailbreak in the beginning, I couldn't keep track of who was part of the gang who broke in and got away.
You mean you couldn't keep track of all the sweaty, bearded, mustached faces?
Because it was, like, were they trying to break out the kid that Kane prevents from breaking out?
Right.
So, I think so.
Like, yeah. No one actually escaped except maybe two of the dudes who broke in. Right.
Yeah.
And even then I noticed they've only got four horses, so they weren't expecting all of those dudes who broke in to live. And they didn't accomplish what they wanted to accomplish anyway, but it was unclear. Like, I had no idea who they were, and they kept popping back up. Like, they pop up and beat the shit out of him in the cave when he gets that job with the wagon. And then I think it's one of those gang guys that kills, is it Billy?
Billy, that was the part, because, like, he's beating the shit out of this guy, and then, like, right before they change the scene, he's like, oh, and that's, you know, and that's for what you did to me in the mine, and I was like, oh, that's the same guy, like, because it was so much time had passed, and I forgot what he looked like.
And also, is it, like, is he beating him up in the mine because he prevented them from breaking the one guy out?
Right.
Yeah. Like, is that what it was? That was, like, the one thing I wanted to be clearer.
It was very unclear. Like, it was like, I got the idea. I was like, oh, these people don't like him. But I'm like, it seemed like they hated him a lot more than was necessary. Because, like, unless he was something more than just another guy in prison, like, what do they care? You know, right? He's just a dude in prison. And then, like, when they beat him up in that cave, or if that, whatever, and he's like, they're like, oh, and that's what the rest of your life's gonna be like. Like, your life's gonna be real hard, because they're gonna follow him around and fuck with him. But I'm like, why are they wasting their time on this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know he's Superman. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah.
So actually, like, that's the after credit sequence, which got cut, is when he picks himself up and dusts himself off, and he's like, oh. Oh, Lois, I don't know what happened.
I think what made that ending scene more upsetting was Anne Francis's acting.
Yeah, that was hard.
She is like I loved her character.
It was great.
Although, like, why did we dress her like they dressed her? She came to work in her clothes from the 1970s, because she wears pants through the movie,
right? Did she step out of a JCPenney catalog?
So my full belief, my headcanon, is that she is a time traveler from the 70s. And it is her goal, like, when he meets her at different points, it's like when he meets her in that ghost town, that's her sort of like traveling back in time. And she's already met him, but she's pretending not to know him. And just so she can see him one more time. And then like what she's trying to do is she's constantly stuck in this loop where she's trying to make it so that he doesn't die, but she never gets there in time. That's my headcanon.
I love that you brought that up, Mel, because after watching the movie and it was over, I'm like, I want to see the movie from her point of view. And I'm like, man, if you make her a time traveler, this is even better. Like, that would be great, of her trying to adjust the course of time so that he can live.
Like, she goes as far back as, like, his childhood to, like, try and guide him like back onto the straight and narrow.
But I love, like their romance was so... Like, it was like, slow burn, but not... Like, you knew immediately they were going to get together.
It was adorable.
But it wasn't, like... It was quiet, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. And after the last movie we watched, it was so nice to see that someone drank their respect women juice and, like... You know?
Right. It's just like...
It was just, like, they were treating each other as people. And that was so it was not nice to see.
Yes.
Like,
even the saloon girl was a great character.
I loved her, too,
Sherry. But I loved the moment when Monica and Francis, like, when they're in the hotel room and he's decided he's gonna, like, do the ranch thing and he wants to do it on his own and get the money. And they have, like, that confrontation, and it's finally the moment where they're like, I like you.
Yeah, like...
But it's the only time we see her in a dress. And that, like, was like, oh, she put a dress on so that she could be fancy? So she could be fancy for him? Like, that's so cute. Like,
Which made that, like, end scene so much worse. Because, like, it was so grounded in reality. Like, the snippets we got, I was like...
Oh. And the scream is just, like... heartrending,
piercing,
heartrending. Like, she's piercing. She's a fabulous actress. Like, she's really good actress. But it was just like, huh.
This movie's a rough one, and it did. I mean, to me, I felt like it really did kind of drag, which I think was on purpose, because you're supposed to see, like, this guy can't catch a break. Like, he's trying. He's not doing anything wrong.
And the pacing was weird. Like, it was slow, but every time it would get, like, I'm like, oh, okay, it would pick back up again. So I don't know if it was, like, I don't know if I could say it was poorly paced. It was just slow.
Yeah.
Just a little oddly paced.
Oddly paced, yes.
Because there were a few, like, hard cuts where it would just be, like, scene over, and then it would say, like, summer.
Yeah.
It literally flashes up there. It says scene over.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, what season were we in before? Because it wasn't like you could see visually what season it was. We're in the desert. It kind of looks like the same season all the time. But they would tell you a different season, and you're like, well, what season were we in before? Like, I had a hard time figuring out how much time has passed.
It's December.
Yeah. like, I think it was supposed to be, like, his... like a full year of him being out of prison, I think was what they were trying to do. I think.
Augtember.
But yeah, no, I thought Monica was a great character. I loved that she was an artist. I love that she was fascinated with his face. And yes. I especially loved the moment where she's like, I have to shave your beard.
He was like, let me do the shaving. And she's like, no, this is fun. I want to shave your face.
It's like, I want an excuse to touch you.
Let me
Mr. Beefcake.
Yes.
And he is so tall. It's like she's on a ladder to try and shave his face.
That's part of the reason I thought she was a child when the camera first turned to her.
Right?
She looks so teeny tiny.
In her 1970s shirt and jeans.
And her 1970s haircut.
Oh my God. Yeah. The higher the hair, the closer to God. Am I right?
Yeah.
Which no one is closer to God than Clint Walker.
He's pretty tall.
So huge.
That man scrapes his head on the ceiling in a cathedral.
Oh, like, he was like, he walked down the street and you could see him coming from a mile away.
Such a big dude. Like,
I kept expecting him to like flex and his shirt to explode. Can we talk about Billy's character? Because he was, I have so many notes about him.
Same like, here.
My principal note for Billy is that I was so glad to see him get slapped around.
Yes, same.
So it's so funny that you mentioned the slapping of Billy, because Billy gets his shit slapped out of him, because he is pretty annoying. All the scenes between Billy and Kane read to me as an after-school special trying to direct kids away from being gunfighters.
Right?
Yes.
It was like, if you just make Billy be on drugs, you have an after-school special on don't do drugs.
I wrote down, I have like mostly questions in relation to Billy, and it's like, what is with this kid? Why is he so insecure? And then I wrote down, thank you for slapping him.
I enjoyed seeing it. It was very cathartic. But I'm like, if you look at it realistically, no one was there for Billy to ground him in a way without violence.
No.
Right.
He had no chance. Like, he's basically, I mean, we're told he is a minor, even though he looks like he's 30. He's basically being raised by Vincent Price.
Who's doing a bad job.
Yeah, who does not give a shit about this kid. Like,
no. Nary a shit.
And it's like, everyone should have been able to see, and I think Kane did, but he didn't do shit about it, because he's like, fuck this kid. But like, he's falling apart. Like, he is...
Oh my god.
Having a crisis.
Yeah, I feel like Kane kind of knew that he was the problem. Like, that the problem Billy was having was that was Kane's presence. Mm-hmm. And I think Kane kind of knew that no matter what he would say to Billy, Billy would not listen.
Right.
Like, the one person who should have stepped up and fucking did something was Ruffalo, Vincent Price's character.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you are clearly seeing that this kid, quote-unquote, is so mentally unstable that he is becoming dangerous. Like, the thing with that sheriff, right, that happens. Yeah. That should have been the second, third, fourth red flag that should have shut Billy down. Like, when Billy tries to... Was the guy a sheriff? Was that what he was?
He was a marshal.
Yeah, like a marshal.
Like a marshal or whatever, who is, like, calling Kane out because they had, like, a confrontation. A beef, yeah. And Billy is, like, pushing for this to happen. And all Ruffalo is seeing is dollar signs. And it's like, how can you not... You live with this kid. You've had this kid on the road with you for what sounds like years at this point. How do you not be like, you know, I think there's a problem. I think there's a problem. I think maybe we don't let him have a gun all the time. Maybe we take the bullets. I don't know.
Maybe we shoot with blanks or something, you know? Like, Lord. You don't need... Yeah, to me, I was like, that you could do some social commentary on that, like, analysis on that Billy character of, like, you know, what happens to a young man who... Like, because it's like he feels like he's been robbed of a life that he can't have, because he's like, I was born in the wrong time. I would have been such a badass if I'd been born in the quote-unquote good old days, which I can't have.
He feels like a precursor to, Titanic. What's his name?
Billy
Zane. No, what's the actor? No, not Billy Zane. Floppy hair, everybody loved. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Quick and the Dead, he feels like that genre of gunslinger kid who's 100%. Just He should have looked as young as Leonardo DiCaprio did in Quick and the Dead, and it would have been more accurate. But it's like, if that character from Quick and the Dead was unstable, that's Billy. Like, he is very good. He is objectively better than Kane at gunfighting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is objectively better. But it's like, he can't handle not being famous or not being praised. And no lie, I kind of loved in the saloon Sherry's put down of him when she was like,
that was awesome.
Like, I forget what he says to her, but he says like something to her, and her response is like, "Sure, honey, you do make a lot of noise." And it was like, oh,
oh.
Yeah, he goes up and he says like,
"Say, aren't you that kid from the shooting show?"
Yeah. Star.
Oh, well, I didn't see the show, but I sure heard it.
You did?
Say, honey, you sure do make a lot of noise.
That's right, yeah. Oh, I heard the show. Yeah, you sure do make a lot of noise. Like, I love you, Sherry. You're great.
And he just deflates.
Yes.
And speaking of to tack on to Billy, is there's a whole underlying thread in this whole movie that I rather enjoy, and it can be applied to like any time period. And we still all have these people rolling around who said like, "Man, I wish I could have lived back then," or "Wouldn't it have been better back then?" And like, no, you don't.
Mm-mm.
Like, we're all lovers of history here, and like, I would love to get in a time machine, and I would love to visit the age of pirates, but I also would not like to have scurvy or any number of easily preventable diseases now. Or, you know, drown or get killed in a battle, or, you know, like, or the Old West for that matter. Like, they keep saying, like, oh, it's like, oh, man, go back in time and, like, kill dudes. Like, that's really hard, killing people by any measure.
And I think what they did is this movie did a really good job of showing that. Because Billy kills Ruffalo, which... Dear God, can we please talk about Vincent Price's death scene in a minute?
Next.
Because
my God,
I want to talk about. Just want to talk about Vincent Price.
We're gonna have a Vincent Price.
But he goes nuts because he loses his grip on reality is what happens, and he shoots Ruffalo because he's mad he doesn't get the correct amount. He doesn't get the most in the cut of the money, right? He thinks he should get more than Kane, and Ruffalo says some things that I want to be like, dude.
Don't say that to a kid with a gun who is like, got a complex, and he gets more money because he's a killer, and it's like...
But this kid is like clearly coming apart at the seams, right? Which, say what you will about the actor being too old to play this part, he did a really good job.
He did an amazing... I was like, his performance, like... He didn't look the part, but acted like a kid. Like.
Spot on. Mm-hmm. So he kills him very brutally. And then he's like in a barn or something. He's somewhere else. And the gang comes back and goes to rob him. And he's like, "Ha ha ha, I've killed a man. Look at the notch in my gun. Blah, blah, blah." And then he goes to shoot the guy in the gang, and like, to me, I was like, oh shit, he emptied his gun, he has no bullets, and he just breaks down, and he's confronted by this gang member. And I think, even though, like, again, one of the weaknesses of this movie is they didn't connect the threads of the gang very well, but in the beginning of the movie, that gang is ruthless. Like, they fling bodies at this Gatling gun of this gang to try to get this one guy out. Like, they don't, like, when you look, they don't have enough horses to get away for all the dudes that they bring in. They have they have one extra horse for the guy that they are jailbreaking. There's like four dudes that go in plus other dudes. One dude gets out, and it's expected there's supposed to be two dudes that get out. The guy...
And that leads to, like, one of the best exchanges of the entire movie at the end, which is, like, "You're not really going to shoot me, are you?" And I think it's Santee, he says, like...
You're not gonna shoot me, are you?
You bet your ass I'm gonna.
Oh yeah, he's like, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so, and Billy just breaks down sobbing, like, I don't want to die. Like, suddenly he's gotten what he's wanted, but he can't handle it. And I think one of, like, the coldest things the gang member says is, didn't anyone ever tell you, boy, never holster an empty gun? And it's like, oh.
And Kane had been Kane told him that early on. He was like, nobody, you know, nobody back then would holster an empty gun, because that was something I guess he did all the time.
It's like, you've
Just like a teenager. I'll do it later.
Yeah, it's like, you've emptied your gun. Fill it before you
put it away. Fill it back up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was, I thought, very affecting, that the whole Billy thing, because it was, to me, it was very believable for a hothead young kid who has this, like, romanticized view of what things used to be, of, like, what he would want to be and how he sees himself, and then gets what he wants and pays the price.
But Vincent Price.
Vincent Price.
If you're going to cast, if you have a movie set in the 19th century, and it's 1970, who else would you cast for a sideshow hustler?
I loved it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. See this spectacular shooting show and death display.
Holy shit.
I don't know that I completely bought his accent, but I loved him.
He...
What do you mean accent? He was from St. Louis.
I don't know. It sounded a little off to me.
He just sounded like Vincent Price to me.
That was just Vincent Price.
Okay.
He plays himself in every movie.
Like, and the best part about him is, like, he is an amazing actor. He does all of these things, and he was also, like, a gourmet chef.
Really? Yes! Oh, man.
Yes. He has, like, several cookbooks that he wrote with his wife.
I have to go get one now. I have to have the Vincent Price cookbook.
Yes.
Oh, man. America's Renaissance man, Vincent Price.
Yep.
I have a note that he was a wizard, because when he first talks to Kane, they're outside, and then, like, he goes to hand him the gun, and then they're inside of a building, which I think was just they did cuts like that a couple times, but that was the first time they did it, and I had to rewind to be like, were they inside? Why are they in a building now? I thought they were outside.
Yeah, he was magical, wasn't he? I just like, every time Vincent Price was on the screen, I was just like, man, I love this guy.
He's just like, what I think I love about him is, like, it doesn't matter what movie he was in, you know, top, you know, flight movie, you know, like a picture, big picture, or like a dinky B movie. He always did his best.
Oh yeah.
And, like, he's like, oh, you want me to be a traveling, you know, sideshow Barker guy?
Mm-hmm.
Done. Easy.
Old West Huckster? Done.
Got it. I got you. Like, I will be the best Old West Huckster you've ever seen.
And he was great, because he was just, like, your classic, I don't care about anything except getting more butts in seats.
Oh, when he tells Billy, like, something like, I don't tell you how to shoot, don't tell me how to bark. Like, I was like, oh.
Oh.
I thought that was good. And then, like, when the lawyer guy comes up and is like, hey, have you seen Kane? I'm looking for him. And he's like, he's got a noose and he's making it dirty to, like, hang it up. And the guy's like, oh, you've got a mistake there. That guy, like, was run over by a cart or whatever.
Oh, I think you've made a little mistake here.
Huh?
Clay Allison died under the wheels of a wagon. He was drunk.
You don't say. Hey! You're an attorney who's got himself hung recently.
Yeah, I'll just change the card.
But I like that Vincent Price, like, points at the sign or whatever, like $500 or whatever it is, to prove that any of these things are fake.
Yeah.
It's 1891. Who's gonna do it?
Yeah, they Google doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, exactly. What are you gonna do? Google it? That'll be invented for a century, ding dong.
Did you clock any of the names on the artifacts?
I think I saw.
I saw, like, was it I think Crazy Horse was mentioned. I didn't catch too many of them.
Was there like a Billy the Kid or something like that on there? Or Jesse James?
Yeah, oh yeah, Jesse James, yeah.
But there was a pistol on there, so this was the gun that shot Lincoln, which I was like, I don't...
False.
I don't know if you would have that.
I think at one point he says, like, see the bullet that killed Lincoln.
Oh, God. I don't think you could see that.
You can. I have.
Just not at a sideshow.
Not at a sideshow hosted by Vincent Price.
Which, I must know, where is the bullet that killed Lincoln?
It is at Ford's Theater.
Why is it in jail?
Which is gruesome.
I've been to Ford's Theater. Where?
It's underneath, in the basement. They have a little museum.
I have to go back now. Oh, that's really morbid. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh!
Yeah, it's weird. It gave me thoughts for a while, like mostly just like thoughts that were basically this.
It's a little morbid.
I mean, that's like if you go through like some of those like kind of like what Vincent Price has, which is like the thing that comes to mind is like the London Dungeon, which has like all those things of like medieval and Renaissance torture devices, or like how Madame Tussauds used to have like wax figures of murderers and stuff like that that you could go see.
The terror during the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like,
yeah, it's,
people love that shit though, you know? True crime.
Yep.
I don't know. We're fascinated by death and crime. You
know, oh, yeah.
Memento Mori was a thing, is a thing, you know?
Yeah. That is, yeah, that's the, well, Exhibit A, the career of Vincent Price.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, Vincent Price was great in this, and I loved it. And I don't know if he's in any other Westerns, but we'll have to track those down if he is.
I mean, he's in so many movies.
Yeah, I was slightly disappointed, because I was looking for a Vincent Price Western for our Halloween episode, which is coming up next. Our next episode will be our Halloween episode. And I was disappointed that none of them were like horror themed or even camp horror. And I was like, Vincent, my man.
Give me the horror.
But give me some camp.
But I think we need to talk about his death.
Oh my God.
That was
who
pretty.
Who would like to describe it for us?
I wrote, what a death scene.
It went like, on a while.
It went on a while, and I wasn't upset about it because
I called it epic.
Oh, it was slow. Like, this is how you know you have a true professional. Okay. This is how you know. Like, so when did he pass? He passed.
It's like 1990,
1993
right?
Is when he passed.
Wow.
So at this point, like, I'm just glancing through his filmography. Like, his filmography starts in 1938. So this man has been acting at this point for 31 years. Consummate professional. There is, like, so many credits if you look on his Wikipedia page, right? Like, he has a separate Wikipedia page for his filmography. That's how much there is. So, like, this death scene, like, Billy shoots him and he like flings back, and it's gruesome in a way that I wasn't exactly expecting.
Especially since when you see the deaths in the very beginning from the Gatling gun, I was like, what are we in for? They just had people like flinging themselves aside with like no blood or anything. I was like, all right. Yeah.
This is like the squibs are exploding. So there's blood and there's like cast off blood, and it's all in slow mo. And he is acting out every shot and like,
shock.
We'll have to do a reel of it for the Insta.
Yes, it's so good.
It's so good. And I think, like, it could have been hokey because it's in slow-mo, but he sells it.
Oh, yeah.
And when he finally collapses, it's like, you can tell Ruffalo is not expecting this. It's a lot. He thinks that he has been in control this entire time, and he dies with shock on his face.
I had a friend in college once who called Vincent Price the most photogenic man who ever existed. I think this is this particular scene is a selling point.
I don't think you can get a bad shot of Vincent Price.
Mm-mm.
No, absolutely not. He's either handsome or ghoulish or slippery or sneaky. He's whatever you want him to be.
Yes.
It's a reference. I don't know how many people will get it, how many people have watched How I Met Your Mother, but it's like Neil Patrick Harris's character in that TV show where the running joke was you could never get a bad picture of him and they would try. And every time they got the picture back, it was him doing like model faces. Like, even if they try to catch him, like, surprise.
But I think it's like a clear, like, I think it's a clear instance of, you know, he was doing a performance in that, at least visually, that was still 100%. He was 100% committed to this little B movie, this little rinky dink movie, where he's like, oh, I am going to play this character to the fullest, and you are going to, like, it's going to be in slow-mo, and I'm going to sell it. And it's so good.
And I feel like it was effective also just because, like you were saying, with his acting and the rest of the movie, where he feels that he is in control the whole time. Like, it's like he knows, he's like, Kane, you're going to join up with me. Like, maybe you don't want to now, offer still stands. You're going to join up with me. And then after Kane leaves, he's kind of like, he's like annoyed, but he's kind of like, he'll come back. Like, I know he'll come back. Like, completely self-assured.
I've been around the block. Yeah, like, I know how this works.
Yeah.
I even wrote the note down, like, does Ruffalo and Kane know each other? Or Ruffalo. I keep saying Ruffalo like it's Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. Same right here.
The character is based on the great grandfather of Mark Ruffalo.
Is it now?
No, it absolutely
isn't. I was about to say. I call the bullshit.
Mark Ruffalo, have you been in a Western? Please tell us.
I bet that man has.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Bet that man has. But like when he meets Kane, It's like, I had the question, like, do they know each other? Have they met each other before? Because he does this thing where it's like, he almost acts like he knows him. It's like, why does he have Kane's gun? Because clearly, like, some of his stuff is fake, but that gun is real. Like, Kane is like, yeah, that's my gun.
He won it in a poker game.
Yeah.
That was so cool. So slick. So slimy. So sleazy.
Yeah.
But I also liked him, like he was sleazy, but I liked him. Yeah. He was one of those honest villains. Like, you knew exactly what he was. You knew exactly what he was about. And it was like, okay, that's just who this dude is. You know, he's a mustache twirler. Got it.
Lawful evil.
Right? Yeah. But like, poor.
Yep.
The one place that he failed was, you know, Billy. Like, yeah, you saw this kid's potential, but dude,
you did nothing.
You have a literal, you know, loaded gun in both the metaphorical and literal sense with this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, he's treating Billy like one of his artifacts that he can just like dust off and hang back up or change the signage on, when it's like, this is a real human being. And I'm like, you need to treat him a bit better, or knock him down to the ground somehow so that he, you know, gets his feet firmly planted.
But
you give him a gun every day.
Right. And I mean, I think part of it is, I don't think he recognized how unstable Billy was.
Oh,
like, it's like he didn't occur to him that he could be dangerous.
Like, this kid, right. Like, oh no, he's just, you know, your Joe Schmo kid, not a kid who actually has, like, on top of his own insecurities that he has, there's something else not right or not good going on with this kid.
Yeah, like, he's so deeply untethered. Like, and he treats him like, I'll find another kid. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, and I'm like, it would almost have been kinder for him to be like, kick him out of the show.
Well, it was almost like, you know, he finally tells him, like, I could find somebody else. And for someone who wasn't so unstable, that probably would have been a wake up call, like the thing he needs. But he wasn't.
Yeah. Mike, this, he was not hugged enough as a child. He has this deep-seated need for, like, a lot of validation and, he's not getting it.
He needs to not be around firearms and maybe needs some medication.
Yes, of which would not be available.
No.
Yeah, outside of snake oil and liquor, neither of which I think would help.
Like, I hope you like a morphine addiction, because that's about as good as we can get in this era.
Right.
Pretty. God. Before we delve into segments, one thing I just wanted to comment on that I really liked was the hand-painted signs that just filled up the screen behind Ruffalo, Vincent Price. I was like, that just sold it for me. Mm-hmm. That just like, that's my postcard there. It's just like
cheating.
The slick face on Vincent Price gesturing in front of these signs. That's one of my favorite things about going to like a fair or like, you know, a carnival is seeing those, because they dazzle.
And he was like, for a movie that wasn't very visually interesting, he was interesting. Like him in front of those posters, like every time you're like, I'd like to go see the shooting show, please.
Yeah, yeah, I'd sure. be like, I'm here's, buy a ticket.
Yeah, here's my nickel. Let me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go stare at the fake artifacts you have.
The death mask of Jesse James. I'm pretty sure that's not Jesse James. Yeah, it is.
That looks a lot like you, sir. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
You know what? I had fun for my nickel. I'm good.
I know, yeah. And you gotta imagine, like, I'm sure people were like, yeah, it's hokey, but, like, what else am I gonna do? Like, this is fun. Like, you know, it's colorful and interesting.
Movies haven't been invented yet.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go see what that man's yelling about. You in? Let's go. We'll get some lunch after.
Let's do it. Yeah, get some beers. Watch this weird shit.
Yeah.
That is one thing that unifies humanity. We just want to see something weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, there's something weird going on over there. Yeah, let's go look at that.
He wants a dollar? All right.
Is it worth a dollar to me? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why not? What else was I going to use that dollar for?
We ready for some segments?
Let's do it.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Could we start with costumes?
Sure.
Because I have opinions.
Okay. Oh. I don't think there was a designer on this. There are two people listed as wardrobe, one man and one woman, and nothing really of significance. It's clearly this was a pull from stock. And again, it's another one where I think people just showed up in their own clothes.
Especially Clint Walker, because nothing else would fit him.
like the outfit he has to wear when he's in the show as Killer Kane. Maybe that's what his mother named him. Maybe his mother named him Killer, which in that case, like, ma'am.
Yeah.
You're setting your kid up for failure.
Like, that is not going to be, so he's not going to be a doctor someday. Because, like, who would be like, hey, Dr. Killer? Like,
right.
Please perform surgery on me. You know, like, it's just not going to work.
The best case scenario is professional wrestler.
Right? And the WWE doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Nope.
But anyway, yeah, like, that black outfit, like, also clearly doesn't really fit him, which I kind of, in a way, appreciated, because it's, like, because the premise is, like, Vincent Price's character makes it for him and is, like, well, it's not quite big enough, but we'll make it work, and they clearly make it work, so it fits in with the story they're telling. So, of all the movies we have watched that have been on a budget, I thought this one was passable. Like, it did a good job. Like, it's still, you know.
I think it was even, you know?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But Anne Francis, my girl. Like, I get, I understand. It's almost like they give her one period dress, okay? Also, loved the Saloon Girls. Super appreciated the Saloon Girls. Dear God. That hair, like, they must have been very religious people, because the hair was so high. They were so close to God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But Anne Francis's like painter outfit. She's wearing jeans and a blouse from like I imagine she walked onto set in the like, did they lose her outfit? Like, because I get the what they were trying to do is she's this East Coast girl, she's a rich girl,
she's a rich girl.
Yeah. She's gone too far. Now And
now you're living in the West. Look at her paying a guy with a big chin. I don't know.
but like, she very clearly is in, like, it's meant to be this, like, tomboyish outfit. Like, not like other girls. but it's, no, she is a time traveler. She is, is not from the late 1800s when this is set. She is a straight up time traveler.
I half expected her to like walk into one scene with like a t-shirt that says like Rolling Stones World Tour 67. Though,
I did like the conversation her and Kane had where I was like, oh, they're discussing privilege. Because it was like, my dad struck it rich and then we moved back east and lived in comfort forever. And he's like, well, my dad tried to strike it rich. And then when he wasn't beating the shit out of me, I was being ignored in a fort. Wonder what would have happened if your dad struck it rich and mine didn't. I'm like,
do you know what's, do you know, and that's like the funny thing about this movie is like, compare it to the 1967 one we just watched with John Wayne and Kirk Douglas. I've already blocked the title because I hated it so much.
Oh, no.
How can you forget the name with such a catchy tune?
My God. Oh, the War Wagon. That's it. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
No.
Wah! but, like, you look at the treatment of, like the way manhood was depicted. It's very toxic. You know, women were objects. You know, poor Kate was a potted plant. Like, you know, women were vending machines. And then you look at this movie where they're having discussions about class and privilege. And there's even like sort of criticism on like what happens once you get out of jail. Like, how is he supposed to live if he can't get a job? And it's asking these hard questions. And it's also like, he is this giant dude who is very manly. Like, objectively, you look at him and he's very manly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's this incredibly gentle soul who's kind to women. And in a weird way, like, he's kind to Billy, who clearly has issues. It's 3 years, like, 2 years apart. It's so different and does, like, such a better job.
And you're right. He's never once, like, people are never like, oh, you're not a manly man because, like, you can't. Like, if anything, I mean, and it gives the commentary of how, like, a lot of people who, you know, you do your time in jail and you end up almost being forced back into crime because you can't get honest work. And this was less that and more like, well, people are like, oh, well, if you weren't proud of your past, then why are you doing these shows? And he's like, it's literally the only job I can get. So, like,
yeah,
you can't, like, judge me.
Like, will you give me a job that's not this? Because that would be great.
Yeah, because I don't want to do this, but I would like to make money, so I have to do this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder, what would be shaking hands with Clint Walker be like? Would that be like, you know, like stuffing a Thanksgiving turkey, your hand just disappears into it?
He would have, like...
His hands are huge.
Like...
Jesus Christ.
He goes to kiss Monica, and I'm like...
I know, right? I would be like, that's my whole forearm, sir. Like,
And he'd be like, oh, I can't hear you. My head is three stories above you.
I would just be shaking his index finger.
Yes.
this gentle giant of a man.
What were your thoughts on the costume, Stu?
I did not expect much of this movie because, like, the army soldiers were basically just, like, whatever pants they had and blue shirts that they just slapped rank insignia on it. They were terrible.
There was no clear... It was, like, it was vaguely army.
Yeah.
Oh, it was the barely army. This is the... No wonder these guys were able to break into this post so easily. The guys were just, like... listen, we just got blue shirts and, like, hats.
Like, we're a far-flung outpost. Like, no one cares.
Yeah, just leave.
That is somebody's, like, last-ditch effort Halloween costume. Just like, oh, shit, I forgot to get a costume for the Halloween party. What do I got to do? Well, I got a blue shirt, and I got that souvenir kepi I picked up at Gettysburg 3 years ago. There, done. Yep.
Done. Perfect.
But, tonally, it was all visually for the costumes, except for Anne Frances, who stood out like a flippin' sore thumb because she was a time traveler. You know, it was a pretty, I thought for budget Westerns, it did what it could, and it wasn't like we didn't have BDSM pilgrims out of nowhere, you know?
I miss those.
Like,
we didn't have kink Kirk Douglas.
No,
kink,
Uncle Jesse.
Kink Douglas.
Kink Douglas.
Kink I still haven't found the picture of his butt. Oh, I'm still looking. Everyone out there in cow-punching land.
Give us the butt cut.
we wanted the scooch cut for Telegraph Trail. I want the butt cut.
Give us the Douglas.
For the war wagon.
Oh, shit.
That's the only thing that'll retrieve that movie, is if we get Kirk Douglas's ass.
Oh, my
Someone
God.
Someone has to have it.
I mean, they showed their whole ass in that movie, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really show oh me the no. Ass, you know? Oh, shit. Well, I think a great segue from costumes would be The Saloon Search. Because speaking of the women with their hair high up in the ceilings, man, was it the Golden Condor, which is the 60s. Like, that is what the 60s thought a saloon should look like. And my thought was like, God, I hope no one's smoking in there because there is so much polyester and hairspray.
God.
That place would go up in an instant.
Yes, that's a fire hazard.
I want to hang out with Sherry. In that saloon.
Yeah, yeah.
She seemed awesome. She had her shit together. She's running that fancy gambling wheel.
So what made me think, what I thought about when I saw that saloon is, Mel, you took us out one time to a restaurant up there in New Jersey you're very fond of called The Pub. And it reminded me of that. I'm like, I want one of those a little bit too sweet cocktails, and I just want to like have like three of that, like a whole night of those there.
So let me describe The Pub to everyone out in cowpunching land.
It's a monument.
It's huge. It's a huge restaurant. It's been their lord for decades in South Jersey near Philly.
At least 60
yeah,
years.
Yeah, and it's like. When you want, it's medieval hall themed, medieval great hall themed. But when
in quotation marks,
because when you walk in, there's like to your right, there's a lounge, which has red leather chairs in it. It's like a cocktail lounge and this big wraparound bar. And then you walk through the two wooden double doors. Oh, God, why am I laughing? I love this place as a small child. And you walk in, and it's just this huge open room. And there's suits of armor in the corners. And it's huge ceilings. And animal heads. Like, there's at least two moose, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, one male moose with big antlers and one lady moose. And at Christmas time, they put Christmas hats on them.
Aww.
And then on the far side from where you walk in, and it's like all red carpet and these big tables, there's an open kitchen where it's just like fireplaces where they do the barbecue.
And this, the Golden Condor, is the Old West version of the pub.
Yes.
It's just like, it's all spectacle. It's not historically accurate. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Give me a Manhattan and keep them coming.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. They have like where's the all it needed was a salad bar like the pub has.
Right.
Like that's all it needed.
Yeah, like a Manhattan or like what's a 60s or 70s cocktail like a grasshopper or something, right?
Oh my god, right?
Just
had to look up
smoke
one
Lucky Strikes.
Yeah.
So, and but if I was to actually like You go there to that kind of bar for experience. But if I'm going to go to be a regular at any of them, there's a second one. It's nameless, but it's got more of a cantina feel because around the bar where the bottles are is like the Spanish looking tile, and it's highlighted on like a fireplace. It's a lot of browns and woods. It's quiet. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go there. I'm going to have a beer and a shot of whiskey and. Have a time.
Was that another place where he and Monica like sat and she sketched him?
Yeah, and then like it's also the same place where like Vincent Price basically told Billy for the first time that you ain't shit.
It's that second little town that they're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one.
I liked that one too. I think I wrote Golden Condor down mostly because I would just want to hang out with Sherry because she's just so cool.
Sherry's great. And I like that when Kane leaves, he thanks her and she's like, for what? And he's like, for trying. And I was like, that was very sweet.
And that sets the tone for the whole movie, really. Just like, you just got to try.
Yeah, and I like that he and her were kind of like buddies. Like you didn't.
Yeah.
Like there might have been something romantic there, but like he's this huge dude. Like he could be really scary. I know we keep harping on how big he is, but he's a huge dude.
We cannot harp on it enough.
And I love, like, when we meet her, he's walking down the street with her. And it's almost like he's making sure she's okay. And you would get the feeling that he would do that for any of the girls in that saloon. Like, he's
just a nice dude.
Well, and even when you talk about
my job. Yeah.
Yeah, like even when you talk about like when he talks about like when he did kill people, he's like, I never shot anybody in the back. I like it. Not that it's good to kill people. I'm not trying to justify that. But it felt like he wasn't like those guys in the gang sneaking up and ambushing people.
Yeah,
you know,
it sounded like he was a hired gun. Like he treated it like a job and he did it in his quote-unquote honorable way, but he's kind of like, yeah, I know that you shouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, you know.
And I think people didn't shoot him in the back, because he did mention at one time that somebody did try to do that, and they shot him in the ass.
Right.
Probably because that's how tall he is. But it probably ricocheted, and then he, like, killed, like, an old lady or something. And like, oh, we can't do that.
Yeah, he's impervious to bullets. But then, like...
Yeah.
You know, his relationship with those saloon girls, though, because, you see him walking with her. But then it's like when she runs out, it's almost like she's not admonishing him, but like, hey, you know, tell people your real name. They probably would have understood. Like, it's less of a like, to me, it read more as friendship, which I thought was very sweet. That he's like, I work here. I've made friends here. Like, I started a life here. And then he had to uproot himself because she's just kind of like, don't do that again, like, next time. Because, like, I feel like if it had been more romantic, it would have been a little more of a fraught goodbye.
Yeah. She was definitely like, I wish you could stay because you are a nice person. And, like, again, it's that, like, they're pretty ladies in the Old West who work in, you know, a job that could be dangerous for them. You know, and having someone like him who is an actual kind person and treats them like people is probably great for them. And, you know, he seems like a likable dude.
Yeah.
He's probably the world's best bouncer.
Honest to God.
It's like somebody probably is trying to start some shit in the bar and be like, what are you going to do, man? I'll shoot you. And then this man who fills up a doorway comes in like, you want to think about that? Like, yes, I'm thinking about it very hard.
I'm currently thinking about it in my pants right now that I need to go change.
I can just imagine that all that happens is two hands come down and like pick the two guys who are fighting. It's like a claw machine. They pick him up. He picks them up by the scruffs of the neck and just like off their feet and just walks them out the door. And just throws them.
Exactly. And then they land in the street and they're like, we're very sorry. Please do not hurt us.
It's like Andre the Giant, you know, in Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Like,
he's huge.
When he picks up an ego.
He goes back to the bar at the end of his shift, like, let me get a beer. And he like just like heaves the keg up onto the bar.
There
he's
you
like,
go, thanks.
Good lord. So let's see.
Well, you want to do the
postcard? I kind of did. Mel, you mentioned that this is not a very visually stunning movie in many regards. A lot of good interior shots. And like I said earlier, mine is just like Vincent Pricing it up in front as a, you know, huckster.
So my postcard was before I realized what the lawyer was going to do. So you have to take that with a grain of salt. It's Anne Francis when she's watching at the end, like the doctor guy or sheriff guy or whoever it is has like left, and you just see the one lone rider coming towards them. I thought that was a good shot.
Mm-hmm. That is good. That is good.
Mine is
but then I hated it because it's the lawyer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mine is from the same scene. And again, I clocked it before anything horrible had happened. And it's the view, basically the opposite view, where you're looking at her and you can see their perfect little 1950s white picket fence house.
There it is! Right. There it is!
And they like these jutting rocks behind it, and they're just like, look at this lovely, perfect life we have together. Isn't this lovely, perfect, and beautiful? And that's where you should end the movie.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. As when he runs up and puts his arm around her, and they're nice and happy, and then don't watch anymore.
There's a cut scene where like they're elderly and they're surrounded by beautiful children.
Their whole family and friends.
Yep.
But here's
it's Christmas.
And just, you know, because I know you'll be curious because we've told you to pause the movie and not watch the rest. What happens is the lawyer's like, hey, your father didn't die. He found a bunch of gold and he died. And now you have a whole mess of gold from your deadbeat dad.
That's what I thought was like one of the strong things about this movie, because up until that point, that's what I thought was going to happen.
Same.
That some random uncle, someone, because Kane's whole thing is he needs money. And then he wants to get this money. So, because he doesn't want to use, because Anne Francis is rich, is a rich girl. And he doesn't want to use her money. He wants to do it on his own. You know, which.
Or it's, or maybe he's representing some big paper back east who wants to run a bit about one of the last gunslingers.
Right? You know, like. That would be better, because then it could be like, we want to run a thing about, you know, one of the last big gunslingers, and they can be like, we're not that Kane. I don't know who that is. And done. Like,
roll credits.
But like, he's finally left that all behind, and you expect all of these things, and then it just takes your heart and it throws it on the ground and it stomps on it multiple times.
It's going through this stupid, it's probably not a stupid song, but it's a stupid song. As the stupid lawyer is on a stupid horse, then they linger on Kane's body, and I'm like, stop it. Stop hurting me. Yeah,
what are you doing, movie?
And the lawyer as well, like, as he's riding away, like, that actor, like, he's barely in it, but but as he's riding away, and you see his face, and it's not relief.
Mm-mm.
It's not
relief. It's fury.
It's fury, but it's also, like, regret, and like, it's this sense, like, you have this sense of he has done this thing, and is he it's like the cycle continues, like, one, because of this, like, the repercussions keep going.
Yeah, right, it's like,
right. Still there.
Yeah. And I love that too, because at first he has like a little smirk on his face, like, I did it, but then it just fluctuates from like, I don't feel any better.
Yeah.
And I've also killed a man. And you got to think, like, this, you know, obviously Kane murdered his father 20 years ago. So, like, he was a young man when it happened, or even a small child. And he has spent 20 years of his life, you know, furious with this man. And it's like, oh, God, you can't really blame
him.
Awful. If someone murdered my father, I'd be pretty pissed about it. But like, good God.
Because I mean, the real thing that you should do in that situation is become Batman.
Right.
And
or Zorro.
He chose not to.
Well, Zorro.
I
made a Princess Bride reference earlier. And like, the big thing about Inigo Montoya is like, you killed my father, prepare to die. Right. Like, Count Rugen is... like, the six-fingered man is straight up an evil person. So, like, when Count Rugen dies, you don't feel bad because he's a shithead. And, like, even Inigo Montoya is, like, you know, like, he has objectively killed an evil person. like someone who needed the killing. And even he's like, I don't know what to do with the rest of my life. This feels weird. Like my whole life has been revenge. Whereas this guy, similar story, has finally killed the man who killed his father. But like, what satisfaction? Like, Kane's not an evil guy. He's not even a bad guy. And like, who was your dad? Like, what was the whole thing surrounding that? You know, like, not that I'm saying like it's ever good to kill someone, but he has this moment of like it's not even like he's killed someone who wasn't the man who killed his father.
Exactly. He's not like, the same man anymore.
Yeah. Like Count Rugen. Yes. Same dude. This different dude. Like very.
Yeah. This doesn't elicit applause.
It was not. It was like an unsatisfying ending for everybody. On purpose.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, this is how the world works. Like, it doesn't, you don't get to have a happy ending.
No, sometimes you don't.
Nope.
And I hated it.
Do we have a, speaking of unhappy endings, do we have a coot?
After all, he's not a bad old coot.
Are we cootless?
He's not a coot.
I didn't clock one, and I don't think Vincent Price counts. I mean, I feel like a sideshow is a perfect place to find a coot.
I would say the closest one was that Marshall, maybe?
Even then, he's just a mad old man.
He's just an angry old man. Yeah. And I liked that scene, especially because Billy like lures that guy there to be like, all right, let me watch you two guys murder each other. Mm-hmm. And as you watch Billy like freaking lose his shit, you can see the Marshall, like, he's kind of like, I don't really want to do this.
Yeah, the Marshall's like, is that what I sound like?
Yeah, he's like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this isn't healthy. Like, I'm gonna go. Yeah, Billy's descent into madness was...
Yeah, that was, like, the first, like, moment where he really cracked, where you're like, oh, this isn't just jealousy and ego. Like, there is something wrong.
Yeah, you have a problem. Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, sorry, cootless this week.
That's all right.
We'll try again next week.
Yeah.
So, how do we feel about this?
No, we have face.
What's that?
Face.
Ah, he
happens to be a sweet-looking dude.
Tell me what your face was, and explain why it was Vincent Price.
Mine was not Vincent Price.
Mine was not Vincent Price. It was Vincent Price, but then I saw another face, and he had to take second.
I mean, Vincent Price is like cheating.
Yeah,
it's like, is it, it's though? Like Lee Van Cleef, like it's just cheating. Like,
it's so good though. I had him early in the movie where he's just like, the first time he pitches the idea to Kane, and he's just like, he's, it's in the dark, and he's just like leering over like the glasses of whiskey. He's just like,
you like money.
Mine is Anne Francis in the hotel room.
Oh, she's, yeah,
like. She is one of my favorite actresses, and she's so beautiful, and she's such a good actress. Like, she's heartbreaking, and it's, you know, like, the way that scene plays out, like, she loses none of her agency, but it's still, like, someone, it's, like, it's really satisfying when you see a strong character be vulnerable, and, like, that's... That breaks me. No, I'm great. And that's like what you get, and you like, she's just great in that scene. I love her face in that scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's like, it's at that moment where I think it's like she realized, because like it's implied that before it's like they kind of met and parted ways pretty quickly, but then like he went and left, and she like went looking for him, and I almost feel like that surprised her as much as it surprised him. Where he's like, "Wow, I really like this guy." God,
and the fact that she puts on a pretty dress for him, like to me, that's like the big deal. Like,
it's like, I don't do this.
Oh man, telling stories visually, that spoke volumes.
Mm-hmm. It was.
She went out of her way.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's like, I know I live in the 70s, but I will put on a corset and a dress and all of the layers.
She's like, once I figure out how to bring you into the future with me, it's gonna be great.
Get you away from this place, and get you drafted by the Green Bay Packers,
right?
My face, I actually gave it to Billy. His face when he realizes that his gun is empty, and you see like one single tear go down his face, where it's like all of the bravado just gets freaking whipped out of him, and he returns to being a child who is terrified.
And if you turn the volume up on that scene, you can hear a very gentle as he deflates.
That moment, I think that was also like a runner up for me, because he just like, it's such a like heel turn. And just when he says like, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, it's like,
like he,
sorry, son.
It kicks you back.
That decision has already been made.
Yeah, he's just a kid with a lot of problems. Like, he should never have been put in this situation that he's gotten himself into.
Oh, no. He's a dumb.
Yeah. But that face was just like, because he's like, he has this like manic grin on his face where he's like, ha, like I'm getting one over on somebody else. And then he realizes like, oh, I'm not cut out for this. This isn't cool and fun.
Oh, no.
This isn't fun anymore. Like,
oh, no, I have fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my face. Give it to Billy.
Yep. So how do we feel about this thing?
Ooh, boy. I mean, I don't know that I would watch it again. And especially at the ending, like, I was liking the movie a lot until the ending. And I know that it was done that way on purpose. You know, like, it's like, sometimes there's endings where you're like, well, that ruined the whole movie. Like, ugh. But, like, this one, it did make sense, and it was a choice they made. But I feel like I'd have a hard time recommending it to somebody unless I'm like, hey, do you want to watch a real bummer? Watch this movie.
Like, yeah, it's like, I would say I liked it. I thought it was a very good movie, for the quality that it was. If I watched it again, I definitely would do the Melissa cut of like, I don't watch the last like 3 minutes. I liked the emotional impact, but I was mad. I was straight up mad for like the rest of the night. I was really mad.
It pissed me off.
And, this would be one, like, if it was on TV, I would watch bits of it and then turn it off before the end.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you.
Yeah. It's good. Hell, this is what I would suggest to Hollywood to remake for that matter.
Yes.
It's a compelling story. It's beautifully told. If poorly costumed.
I think that was just the budget they had.
Yeah. I mean, it looks and reads like a B Western. Like,
but I would also say, like, in terms of costumes, it's not the worst we've seen.
Yeah, I would recommend this movie. I'm gonna give it 4.75 out of 6.
God, I feel like I'd have to grade it lower just because of how angry it made me, which I feel bad about, just because I think it made me feel the way that they wanted me to feel. I feel like it was successful, but I didn't like it.
If I was being generous, because I can look back and recognize all the things that it did well, I would give it a 4. But I think because it made me so mad, I was so mad. Like, even Ben, again, Ben watches these with me. Ben was mad.
two movies in a row. Sorry, Ben.
Like, although the kind of mad that this movie made me was better than the mad. Like, I had an emotion with the movie as opposed to being mad at the movie.
Like,
to me is a big difference. I would watch this again over The War Wagon.
Oh, hands down.
But I don't think I'm going to watch it again anytime soon. I would recommend it if you're sort of like into this kind of thing and you like Vincent Price and Anne Francis, because they're both great in it. But I think 3.5. I don't think you can rate it higher than that.
I give it a 3 for the Vincent Price.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So you hear to hear. This is one to watch, but be prepared to be bummed or not watch the last 3 minutes.
And if you listen to us at the beginning and paused, watched it, and then came back so you weren't spoiled, we're very sorry.
Yes.
I hope they, the rest of your day is very nice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I do want to call out, there was one line from the very beginning that I thought, it just made me laugh. They're about to hang some people, and one guy says,
"Hurry up, fat boy, have a date in hell for dinner."
And I was like, I like that.
Date in hell.
Yeah, that hanging scene was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what are we
kind of set
for?
A tone.
Also, if you can hear that scratching, that's my cat at the door demanding to be let in. Even though earlier when I started, she demanded to be let out. But this is the life we have.
Yeah. Pets for you. I want to thank everyone for listening. If you liked what you heard, please tell your friends. Give us a 5-star review. Like us, subscribe. If you have a question, comment, or something you'd like us to watch, you could reach out to us at cowpunchersshow@gmail.com, or you can see our face selections and postcards and other assorted reels and fun stuff on our Insta at
cowpuncherspod.
So, again, thank you for listening. I am, as always, the Deputy Stu Kaufman.
And I've still got a very complicated face. I am Amy McLeod.
And I'm firing up that TARDIS. My name is Melissa Huggins.
Watch yourself out there on the trail. Hyah!
Hurry up, fat boy.